Hi, I'm Martin.
And I'm Deepti.
And we are
the Movie Librarians. And today we're going to be reviewing the movie The Crime of Father Amaro, or in its original Spanish, El Crimen del Padre Amaro.
The Crime of Father Amaro. 2002 movie, comes out of Mexico.
Yes, a Mexican-Spanish co-production, and it stars Gael García Bernal, Ana Claudia Talancón, Sancho Gracia, and Angélica Aragón, who you may or may not know. But Gael García Bernal, people probably know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so should I get us started with a synopsis?
Please tell us about the movie, Deepti.
All righty. So basically, Gael García Bernal plays Father Amaro, a very, very young, recently ordained priest who has been sent by the bishop who trusts him implicitly to a very small town somewhere in Mexico. I think it might be fictional. I'm not entirely sure.
Los Reyes, I think.
Los Reyes, yeah. I don't know if that's a real place. Certainly, I know the state that they base the story in is fake. So I don't know if Los Reyes is a real place, but maybe somebody will let us know. So Father Amaro comes to this small town in Mexico. It's a very rural, very small. Everybody knows each other. And he's there to work with Father Benito, who's been working there for a long time. He's accepted by the community right away. He's very good looking. People are excited to go to church. And when he gets there, he starts to kind of learn about the church's corruption and its involvement in laundered money and things like that, you know? And
well, just the father there.
Is involved
Benito,
in things.
Yeah.
Father Benito is involved in stuff. And he finds out that Father Benito's actually has a lover. And the lover is the woman who runs the restaurant where Padre Amaro and Father Benito eat every day. Very quickly, in the movie, Father Amaro falls in love with, and the girl falls in love back with him, with this woman's daughter, who's very young. At the time when we meet her in the beginning of the movie, she's dating a young man who's her own age.
He's a journalist.
He's a journalist or a wannabe journalist. Mm-hmm. He's just been offered a job somewhere at a big newspaper. Yeah, and so basically, Padre Amaro, or Father Amaro, and this girl, Amelia, who I think is supposed to be 16 or something, who is also very religious, by the way, so she's, you know, very inclined to be at the church a lot, they fall in love, and they start an affair. And then the rest of the movie is the unfolding of this affair, and it has some predictable consequences, some unpredictable consequences, which you will have to watch to find out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Can't tell you much more than that.
So that's a good synopsis of our film. Thank you, Deepti.
You're welcome.
All right. So what did the critics think of this? Roger Ebert gave it three stars. Three thumbs up.
It's only got two thumbs, Martin.
3 stars. He didn't have thumbs at this point. I think he and Cisco.
Well, he had them.
Okay, yes.
Okay, fine. He wasn't doing the two thumbs up system. This is 3 out of 4 stars.
3 out of 4 stars, yes. And he says, predictably, the film's critics are most upset about Amaro's sexual behavior, when in fact the film's real questions run deeper. Later on, Ebert says, the questions are lost in the excitement about sex, which is often the way it works. Carnal guilt clouds our minds, distracting us from more important issues. So I think like sort of an interesting way of looking at everything that was in this, or at least critical reception to it. I guess this is kind of a meta critique where Ebert is critiquing the critics, just talking about at the time of its opening, it was very, very contentious.
Mm-hmm.
I think in Mexico, there was a lot of issues surrounding it. The Catholic Church tried to say, no, don't go to see this movie. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah, or Catholic groups tried to petition the government to ban its screening.
Yeah. And that's rather predictably because of that. It goes on to be this huge major hit, the best
Even in the U.S., actually. Yeah, it says it was the rights were purchased for a mere $1 million and ended up grossing something like $5 million plus. Yeah, $5.7 million in the United States. So, you know, pretty successful for a foreign film.
Mm-hmm. Streisand effect, that's what it is.
Streisand effect.
That's a social phenomenon that occurs when an attempt to hide, remove, or censor information has the unintended consequence of further publicizing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially if you hear that somebody's tried to ban a movie in another country, you would be like, what's so bad about it? Now I want to see.
So yeah, the Streisand effect was strong in this one.
Is it named after Barbara Streisand?
It is. Anyway, so Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars. Turning over to our tomatometer.
Can I just add something
yes.
to this Roger Ebert discussion? He doesn't really explain why he gives it 3 stars and not 4.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying I think it deserves 4. He just doesn't explain what is problematic about the movie or why he thinks it's like okay.
Well, I think he liked it but didn't love it. So in talking about it, he talks about Carlos Carrera, who is the director of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He says it makes it very direct and heartfelt, like a soap opera.
Right, I guess that's not a good thing.
He says its presence of Bernal is in the cast as a reminder of his work as one of the two young men in Y tu mama también.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the ethical issues in that movie were more complex and deeply buried. He says no complexities here. So I think he's just...
Okay, so it's more couched, his criticism.
I think he
couched.
Likes it, but was like it wasn't anything deeper than that. And there's nothing particularly ground-shattering about it, I guess. Like it's a harsh critique of the Catholic Church, or at least some parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Although he also kind of goes on to say, like, it's not so much about the Catholic Church being bad as that there are people who make up the church who can be bad. So people are fallible, essentially.
Right.
It's humans who are bad. It's not saying that the church is bad. It's saying that there are people involved. And anywhere you have people, there's going to be fallibility.
Corruption.
Yeah. I don't think Ebert was necessarily, like, didn't find anything wrong with it. Just nothing amazing.
Just not, not an Oscar winner.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for Best Foreign Film.
Yes.
For the Oscars. I'm guessing 2003.
Now looking at our old friend, the Tomatometer.
Yes, what does the Tomatometer tell us?
Well, for the critic score, it has a 61% fresh, or 6.19 out of 10.
Okay, not amazing.
No, it's not the worst, but
middling,
it's not
amazing.
And for an audience score, it actually gets higher than the critics, who the audience gives it 74%, or 3.76 out of 5.
Mm.
So it's interesting, there's that kind of large difference between the two,
and
the audience liking it a lot more than the critics.
Okay. Why do you think the audience liked it more than the critics? Or is that getting into our own opinions?
Hard to say. Well, no, not that hard to say. I think in a lot of cases...
Well, it's a scandalous tale.
Yeah. And if you read some of the reviews or some of the audience reviews on the Tomatometer, you know, we've got this one that says, "Hot priest learns the importance of contraception." That's kind of getting into things.
Well, I mean, I guess him being quite young and good looking certainly helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Eddie G says, "How can someone say no to such a beauty as Ana Claudia?"
Okay.
There's a lot of sex appeal in this. Yeah.
It was probably marketed to, I would imagine, as like, ooh, seductive.
It was, yeah.
Sensual story, yeah.
A number of the reviews kind of relate to that. They say, oh, it was marketed as this thing. But then, some people saying how terrible that was and some people being like, oh, they were right. It was so sexy. One of my favorite reviews here is from our friend Lee P.
Okay.
Lee gave it 1 star. He says, "In collection, not seen." That's all.
Maybe this person should have watched the movie
for
rating it and rating it 1 star, no less.
So we're wondering, Lee, why did you rate it
if
you have not seen it? If you've got it in your collection.
He or she needed to make their voice known.
Yep.
Oh.
However, many of the other comments, as I say, are...
generally positive.
We'll give some good responses to it. So there's a lot of, there's a good gamut of responses to this movie. We have interesting comments and a lot who are just talking about how pretty Bernal is or how pretty Ana Claudia.
Talancón.
So just talking about how pretty the two main actors are, essentially.
Always important.
Yeah. So that's our critical response.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat average, a little bit above mid-level, but not too far above.
Okay. All right.
Audience liked it more than the critics did.
Okay.
So moving along to our discussion.
You should ask me what I think.
I thought you were going to ask me what
I
think.
No, but I'll tell you why I'm going to ask you instead, once you ask me.
All right. So tell me, Deepti, what did you think?
So I feel like it would be unfair for me to answer this question because the reason I recommended this movie for us to watch is because I watched it 12 years ago when I was first learning Spanish. And at the time, I remember liking it a lot. But I didn't know if that was just because I was excited because I understood some of what they were saying. So that could have been it. And then more recently, about a year ago, I think, I actually read the original book that the movie's based on. So I feel like I knew too much about it going in to watch it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I feel like, how can I put this? Almost like I'm too involved. Like I can't judge it.
Objectively?
I can't judge it objectively.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I should turn the tables and ask you what you thought, since it was your very first time watching it.
It's true. I didn't even know that it was not your first time watching it when you recommended it.
Oh, you didn't?
No, you didn't mention this to me at all.
Oh, haha, spoilers.
You're
surprise.
Just like, yes, I want to watch this. Although I guess when you had asked me to get it from the library, you would
it
probably
it was for a reason. Yeah.
So maybe you told me then and I just didn't remember.
Possibly.
Quite possible.
Yeah. So what did you think?
In any case.
What are your thoughts?
I quite enjoyed the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a lot to it. There was a lot going on in there that doesn't necessarily get immediately shown, or you don't necessarily think about it immediately when you're watching the movie. So like, yeah, Amelia, the young girl, she is very religious. And so that really plays into how she reacts to the priest. And, you know, he's this very pretty priest, but it's not mm-hmm. just the fact that he's an attractive man. Like, he's a holy man and this thing that she's really dedicated herself to. And, you know, she's always teaching catechism and going to church all the time, going to mass all the time. It's like her big thing is really a big part of her identity is the church.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all wrapped into her then having this attractive father who, not father, but like
priest.
Yeah. Yeah, an attractive guy who is also attracted to
right,
her.
Right, who's also dedicated to God, like
yeah.
she is.
Yeah, so he's mm-hmm. sort of her path to God. And she's only 16, so doesn't necessarily have any kind of background to really know not to do this thing or to know that he would be taking advantage of her. And he's also young, so he doesn't necessarily have the same sense of things.
Right.
But also I think he should have been a lot more just coming out of being ordained. You would think he would be more priestly in terms of keeping it in his priestly pants. Keeping
oh,
it in
God.
The collar, I guess.
Yeah, but you also get the idea. They kind of set it up so that you think he might end up leaving the priesthood to be with her. Because at the beginning, when he first moves there and they're having a discussion among priests, and he's talking about how maybe celibacy is something they should change. He seems like he's more progressive, right? Because he says, like, doesn't he actually say something like, we would have a lot fewer problems if priests were allowed to marry?
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of get the impression that he's quite progressive, maybe forward-thinking. And this Amelia certainly, I think, thinks that he's going to leave the priesthood for her,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, they're in love, so he should leave the priesthood and they can run off together.
Yeah. So yeah, I enjoyed it for its complex undertone kind of things. It doesn't mm-hmm. end really on a... It doesn't end well for anybody, but it also ends well in that, you know, he continues to be a good priest or a priest to people.
Yeah.
Which I think is part of that complexity at the end. Because, I mean, without giving away sort of the big things that happen, the crime really is that he continues to be a priest.
Shh. Say no more.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways that could go, right?
Yeah. Were you surprised at all by the ending? Were you kind of like,
No, but I think that was more my own general cynicism.
Right.
I was like,
you're pretty cynical.
Well,
as the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, no.
It's like, well, of course he's still doing that.
Yeah.
but although at the same time, it was a little bit surprising. Like he seems, starting out, he seems so sort of fresh and like he would be a good person
yeah. genuinely, outside of being a religious person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the fact that by the end he continues along was...
Well, I think it shows how he's kind of then just fallen into the trappings of the church.
Yeah. Right? It really doesn't take long for him to lose the moral high ground that he sort of starts out
exactly
trying to...
Yeah, or his purity that he begins with.
Yeah. So that was my take. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you? Watching it the second time.
I did not enjoy it as much as I did the first time. And I think because the element of surprise wasn't there okay. at all in any of it, because probably the movie itself I could have forgotten because, you know, I have a terrible memory for movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I read the book and that kind of stuck with me much more. And so I kind of knew what was happening at every turn. One thing that surprised me was I was not impressed with the acting. And I don't think it was the acting itself, though, because most of the people who were in this movie, you know, I've seen them, not most of them, I've seen some of them in other things, and they're perfectly good actors. I think it's something about the writing of the script, like the dialogue isn't natural, and everything's a little bit melodramatic and over the top, I find, whereas if it was just a bit quieter and subtler, it would be more impactful. I find a lot of the characters were sort of almost caricatures, like the bishop. I found him, like, yes, you're supposed to see that he's very corrupt and, like, you know, he's just concerned with his worldly goods. But it felt like a caricature, you know? Mm-hmm. And same thing with Amelia and her boyfriend. And, like, everything was over the top. Like, their fights were almost like a teenage drama, like, you know, like a soap opera. It's been described in a couple of reviews like it's a little bit melodramatic, like a soap opera. And that's mm-hmm. the kind of the feel it gave to me. And I didn't like that. Even, like, Gael Garcia Bernal, who's I think, a really great actor. Some scenes where I was like, ooh, cringe, like that was just a bad scene, you know? I didn't like that. But I think it's the dialogue. I think it's the dialogue and maybe the directing, you know, maybe the director encouraging them to be like even more melodramatic when they're fighting or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You also have a much better knowledge of Spanish being a translator interpreter, so you can probably pick out the Spanish side of the dialogue a lot better than I could.
No, but I mean, it was, I suppose with the subtitles that may not come across the same way.
Yeah, I think reading the subtitles, you just have a sense like, okay, I know that this is not necessarily exactly what they're saying, right, so I don't know if that's how they're meaning it
all to be. Yeah, that could be. Maybe they're writing, maybe when I was listening to it, it just seemed not natural.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did think they tried to put a lot into the movie it was a 2-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
And being adapted from a book, I think they tried to keep everything from the book in there that they could.
Yeah, they tried. Yeah.
And there was stuff that didn't necessarily need to be there. Like there's a disabled girl, like a young disabled girl who is being looked after. And I don't know that she really added anything to the plot.
I think she gave an excuse for them to have like a place to spend time. Because, you know, if she's in there and she doesn't speak, so they can go there and use it for their affair. And she can't tell anybody. So yeah. I think it was kind of like a way of injecting that into the storyline or setting up some sort of excuse, a pretense.
Mm-hmm. And you can also, I guess, it gives you more compassion for the sexton who's in there, who then later gets fired and you're like, oh, well, he's got to walk off.
Right. He's been fired and now he's got to take his disabled daughter somewhere else and hopefully get a job somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that was confusing in this movie, it's really hard to tell when it's taking place.
Because
remember, there's cars from like the 50s, but then sometimes there's like, what did we see? There were cordless phones.
Well, the bishop has a cell phone, which I think is meant to be like, you know, he's got the latest technology, he's got so all this money to work with.
Meanwhile, these people in this poor town are still using horse and cart to like move their goods.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably showing the disparity between the two worlds.
But yeah, it's hard to really say when it's happening. If it is supposed to be happening in 2002 or...
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not... Yeah, I mean, those cell phones didn't exist until the 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the original story takes place way earlier than that.
Yeah, it was written in 1875.
Yeah, so it's pretty old. So there's none of this stuff in it. There's no modern technology in it at all. And of course, it develops a lot more slowly and it's a little more scandalous and more scathing. Much more scathing, I think.
How does the movie really relate to the book in terms of...
The Father Amaro character doesn't come across as so likable. In this, you're kind of like, oh, like he's so handsome, you know, and he's so sweet. Like he comes in and he sort of wins you over at the beginning. And then at the end, you see that he's doing his best, you know, even though he's fallen into human trappings, like he's still doing his best for this girl. But it's not like that in the book. It's clearly in the book, he's very much looking out for number one.
Trying to get himself up the priestly ladder.
Yeah, or just sort of trying to protect himself.
Yeah, because in the movie, like first they're mugged early on when he's on the bus to the town. And then the first thing he does is give the guy who's sitting next to him some money.
Right, so they're on a bus going into this small town and they get attacked by some bandits and they take all the money and there's a poor guy sitting next to him and Father Amaro gives him some of his money.
Yeah, you're like, oh, you're a good guy,
Father Amaro. Yeah, so they set you up from the beginning to like him, you know. Or one thing, it's him and he's handsome and he's very young and then he's shown as being generous and, you know, like the embodiment of what a Christian should be, right? And then he gets there and you see him also sort of questioning the goings-on of other people involved in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so you like him, right? Like you like him because of the way they've set him up. But it's not quite like that in the book.
Definitely
book
is more interesting.
More criticism. It's kind of like that slow burn. If you like a slow burn novel where you're like, ooh, I can't. Like just very slowly seeing a scandal develop. It's very satisfying. Whereas it's hard to compress that whole storyline into 2 hours.
Like you said when we were watching it, how Amelia kind of makes the first move on the priest. Which
that's right,
would be very strange in that sort of context.
Yeah, they make her seem like a seductress, which I don't think would ever happen.
It could,
but it didn't happen in the book.
Yeah, they didn't really set her up as that at the beginning. It didn't seem like that was how it should go.
Yeah.
But I think that was...
I think that's part of making Father Amaro likable.
Yeah.
Is like they both fall into it and she's part of the reason, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the book, it's very much sort of, it happens, but then he should know better and not let it continue. And you clearly see her as the victim. Whereas in this, you're sort of like, ah, there's no victim, you know?
You could also see it as kind of trying to soften the criticism of the church in terms of, oh, well, it was kind of Amelia leading Father Amaro down the way. So, like, she's like Eve who's corrupting a man of God.
Yeah, type could of thing. Be. And they definitely make the older priest who's sleeping with Amelia's mother much more likable than he should be. Like, really?
I mean, yeah, he's doing bad things. Like, he's taking drug money.
But they kind of show him as being, the two of them being in love, you know? And you're like, no, not really.
And he's taking the drug book, money for the hospital.
In the book, really, the mother's sleeping with him because he gives them money.
Okay.
Yeah, so she kind of has an incentive to keep being his lover because he's supporting them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So it's a definitely a different take in the movie.
So more complexity in the novel.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Although, you know what's weird is, like, we say it's hard to fit all the stuff that was in the book into the movie. I felt like the movie was dragging yesterday or whenever we watched it. The story could have been told a little more efficiently.
Yeah, but to do that, they would have had to cut out a number of things.
Right, and I think they could have, though. Like, they could have cut out the bit about the priest who was possibly part of the guerrillas group. And, you know, there was a lot of, like, other side stories going on. And
yeah, probably in the book that would have added some more of the kind of ethical ideas and complexities.
Yeah, because the book is very much just pointing out, like, the 100 ways that the Catholic Church is corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, you want as many examples as possible. But in 2 hours, you know, trying to cram too much in is a problem.
And when you're marketing it and creating it mostly as a love story, then
it's, yeah.
Any kind of filmistic film criticism type of things that you filmistic the word that I've
filmistic,
coined,
we're going
I
with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, because this was, you know, my second time watching it, I've tried to pay more attention to things like that. And I noticed there's very little music. Kind of a bare bones, sparse movie.
I really liked the music in it. I thought there was like a nice mix of music that really worked well for everything involved. So I noticed it sometimes, but only in the case of, like, that's great music to have here. It really fits with what's going on. So whereas in The Squid and the Whale, when I didn't really like the music as much, like this one, I thought it was very well suited to the movie.
What about the cinematography? Did you have any comments on that?
It was a very sort of older style of shooting. Like it could almost be from like the 80s or early 90s.
Yeah, it kind of looks like it.
Yeah, which who knows why that is, but
I don't know if it was would have just been something cultural, like maybe at the time that's the style they were doing in Mexico. It's hard to say.
There's one shot in particular that I thought was really interesting or beautiful in a, I mean, it was a grotesque shot, but the way it was done was really quite nice in terms of there was a guy who gets stabbed. He was a photographer. And when they show him being left in the bathroom where he gets stabbed, like, it was really nice him sitting on the toilet and then pans down to the blood dripping down the side of the white.
His feet.
Yeah, that was a really nice shot that I just sort of picked up on when we were watching it. Overall, I felt like a lot of it was kind of lower down in terms of the shooting. So, like, all of the shots felt like they were closer to the ground.
Were they just at face level?
Not always. Like, they weren't so low that you were always looking up at people, but they just, everything felt lower.
Interesting.
I'd have to watch it again to see if there's anything to that.
Yeah, see if it was intentional.
Yeah. Would you recommend it?
Yes.
Question mark.
Yeah. I guess watch it keeping in mind that it's got this kind of melodramatic feel to it.
Yeah. I think people would take that for themselves if they saw it.
I guess so.
If you're okay with a little melodrama.
Well, as in, like, I wouldn't want somebody to watch it and give up on it because it's melodramatic.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd say stick through it for the story.
Okay.
Yeah.
So know that it's going to have this sort of not quite
like
soap
know that
opera-y,
it's a little bit melodramatic, but it's worth it for the story.
Okay.
How about you?
Yes, I would recommend it. I quite liked it.
How many thumbs do you give it? Out of four.
Out of four?
How many thumbs out of four?
I would go with three of my four
three
thumbs.
Of your four thumbs?
Yeah.
Okay. Two thumbs and two toes, two big toes.
Well, two thumbs and one big toe.
Yes.
So yes, I would recommend it. I think there's a lot of good things in it. I enjoy the moral complexity of it and and how at the end you don't know how you should feel about Father Amaro.
See, now in the book, you definitely do not like Father Amaro. You're just like, ah, you are basically, the book is one of these things where you read it and you're like, oh my God, the church.
Yeah, it's not this movie is less about the church. It's not criticizing the church as it is criticizing people within it, because there are all these different ideas of what the religion should be. Like you have Father Amaro, who's saying that, you know, maybe celibacy is a bad thing for us. And then you have the gorilla priest who gets excommunicated, but
that's
he's okay
with it. That's G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A, just to be clear. Gorilla, he's not like gorilla. A priest who's a gorilla.
Gorilla. So yeah, he's not a bad guy, and he
leaves
the church, and he's okay with that. But he, like, you can kind of see why he's doing so, and you can see why he's okay with it. I mean, they don't get enough into that, I think, for it to be what it is. Mm-hmm. And that's why, I agree that's something that doesn't necessarily need to be in the movie, other than maybe...
It kind of contrasts like people who are Christian in quotes or Catholic in quotes and somebody who actually lives it, you know, who actually does kind of what Jesus did.
And
you
also kind of softens things for Amaro as well. So
true, it shows him being sort of conflicted between, you know, the church as a structure and obeying the bishop and all this kind of stuff. And then feeling torn between that and this other priest who is really good, who is doing good things, but he can't support him because the bishop doesn't support him.
It's Father Benito, who's kind of comes across as kind of a bad priest, kind of a bad guy, but he's also a good guy. He's not terrible.
Yeah.
He's doing good things. And then there's kind of this extreme of the gorilla priest who, you know, gets excommunicated by the bishop partly because they have to.
Right. And but so he doesn't see care because for him, that's not what religion is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all these things kind of help to, I guess, humanize Amaro's decisions as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it shows the breadth of people within the church too.
Yeah.
Right?
There's some good complexity in there.
Mm, true. Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, all right, we've got these three priests here who represent different things.
So
mostly recommendation by me, and thumbs up. Three thumbs out of four for Martin.
How many thumbs for you?
2.5.
2.5 thumbs?
Yeah.
How do you get half a thumb?
You cut it off at this joint.
Harsh.
Okay, don't cut your thumbs.
All right. Anything in our mailbag?
Yes.
We have some mail.
We have one piece of mail.
Okay.
From somebody who calls himself Señor Don.
Señor Don?
Yes.
Oh. Señor Don. What does Señor Don tell us?
So last week we were talking about skull sawing open and whether there would be squelchy noises. And my sister said that there might be, depending on what's going on. Anyway. Mm-hmm. And so Señor Don says, just wondering how many skulls your sister has sawed and if she has an alibi.
Right. We should note that Deep D's sister is a medical professional.
My sister is a healthcare professional, and she has good reasons for knowing whether a skull being sawed open makes a squelch sound or not. It's nothing sinister.
Those are legal
sinister.
Reasons.
They're all legal reasons.
Being in the healthcare community,
yeah.
Most healthcare professionals know the sound of skulls squelching, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
At one time or another, I guess you see it.
Okay, anything else from Señor Don?
Señor Don had some suggestions for possible sign-offs.
Okay.
That one goes in the watched pile.
Okay.
Okay. From the screens to the shelves. I'm not sure where that's supposed to go. Maybe at the beginning? Or no, I guess, like, we're going to file that one, kind of?
Yeah, I guess, after you've watched it, you would file it on the shelf.
Maybe our system should involve, like, are we going to keep it on our shelves? Or are we going to put it out on the side of the road?
It's not a bad...
For someone to take for free.
It's true. If we're cataloging it, how are we cataloging it?
Oh, you know, that would make things a lot easier. If we had to choose for The Crime of Father Amaro, whether to put it in a box on the side of the road for someone to take, or put it on our bookshelf, I'd say put it on our bookshelf.
I agree.
Okay.
We would add it to our collection.
Hey, we'll add that one to our collection. I like that. Okay. Maybe that'll be our sign-off.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. Thank you, Señor Don, for inadvertently leading us there.
Yeah, thank you, Señor Don. He says, looking forward to the next one. Thanks, Señor Don.
Great.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. We hope you enjoy this one as well.
And now, what are we going to be watching next week?
So
Martin.
Well, Deep Tea.
Yes.
Next week we will be watching Unicorn Store.
What's Unicorn? That?
It is a 2019 film starring Brie Larson and Samuel L. Jackson and Joan Cusack.
Okay.
We'll be watching it on Netflix.
In Canada.
That brings us to the end. So let's add that one to the shelf.
Put that one on the shelf, Martin.
All right. Put that one on the shelf. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the podcast and the movie.
If you like it, share with your friends. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Toodaloo. We'll be right back. It's true. I mean, what if I walked on my hands? Then maybe my toes would be more important.